Chair notes the presence of quorum, and we will begin today's Forest Practices Board meeting. I'd like to introduce and recognize Board Member Brent Davis, who has joined us a couple times on the phone, but this is her first meeting in person, so welcome, Board Member Davis. And also Board Member Morgan, who's standing in for Kirk Cook of the Department of Agriculture today. So thanks for joining us. Patricia, would you like to grace us with safety?
Good morning and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. In the event of a fire, the alarms will sound and flash. Please leave this room using the double doors in the front of the room. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. So please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can or go under a table. After the shaking has stopped, leave this room using the double doors. In the event of any evacuation of the building, staff will lead you out of the building using the double doors in the front of the room and then the first door on your left, moving away from the building towards the grassy area along Jefferson Street. There, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you in checking in and to responding to emergencies. At this time, I ask that you silence any noise-making devices. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Our first item of business is approval of the May, August, and September meeting minutes. And as board members can see in their BAYA packet, you've got a slightly updated copy of the May meeting minutes, and this just reflects some grammatical punctuation, non-substantive changes. And with that, I think we should probably move a separate motion for each of the months. Maybe that'd be the most orderly way to do it. So on the May meeting minutes, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make the motion.
Motion's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Board Member Little, seconded by Board Member Balish. Discussion on the motion to approve the May meeting minutes. Board Member Herrera.
I had a question that I think under on page 3 at line 40, that Ms. Greg Stewart of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, and I don't necessarily know all the staff people, but I don't recognize the name as being a Fish Commission staff member, and I haven't had the opportunity to call her and ask them, so it might be something Patricia or somebody could look at.
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Nancy.
Other discussion on the motion to approve the May meeting? Hearing none, I call the question. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Board Member Davis abstains. Next, let us entertain a motion to approve the August meeting minutes. I have a motion to approve the August meeting minutes.
So moved.
Motion's been moved by Board Member Stanley. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Board Member Lord. Discussion on the motion to approve the August meeting minutes. Hearing none and seeing no frantic flipping of pages, I call the question. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Motion carries. And finally, we have a motion to approve the September meeting minutes.
I'll move.
Motion's been moved by Board Member Lori. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Board Member Herrera, who got there first. Discussion on the motion to approve the September meeting minutes. Hearing none, I'd call the question, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Abstentions?
Abstain.
Motion carries. Board Member Store abstains. Motion carries. Thank you all. By way of a brief report from the chair, as you can see from the agenda today, both staff at DNR and members of Forest Fish TFW policy have been hard at work on our continuing evaluation of unstable slopes. We have a number of important decisions to make today, and grateful for board members' attention and dedication to this issue. This year, 2014, also marks an important anniversary for this program, and forest practices and protections for salmon and water quality in our state. It's the 15th anniversary of the Forest and Fish Law this year and the 40th anniversary of the Forest Practices Act. We'll reserve some time at the chair's prerogative later in the agenda to just talk about how we might recognize that significant accomplishment, but I think it ought not to go without recognition. So, with that, our first public comment period, general public comment period of the day begins. And Patricia Dewey. Have any takers? Ken Miller.
Members of the board. This is a non-regulatory comment I'd like to make here this morning and introduce a new company which is called the Family Forest Legacies, and Patricia's passed around a little brochure. It's a new tool that we've tried to create that kind of complements what the I read the Forest Practice Board's legislative mandate is to protect natural resources while maintaining a viable timber industry. So this is kind of just another little vehicle to do that. The group of small forest landowners that have got together over the last couple of years and worked out what we think is a good vehicle. We know that there is a lot of old people like myself that have worked decades on their little tree farms and either don't have any heirs or don't have any heirs they trust with the legacy they have. So what this will do is it's a for-profit business. Goal is to conserve and sustainably manage timberlands. We think there's a market out there for it. The concept is that landowner will bring their timberland into this LLC in exchange for shares. I mean, the other option they would have would just be to sell it or leave it to their kids to do whatever they might want to do with it. But it would allow somebody that's had some timberland to bring this asset in and exchange it for a income stream over time that they may want to share with their family or charitable organization. The way it will work is there's a management committee of representatives from the small WFFA and Family Forest Foundation, and of course, some shareholders themselves. There's a lot more information in the brochure. We hope that it will be of interest, and I should mention that Court and Court Blakely helped us quite a bit in the conceptual phase of this and have agreed to, if and when we do get some land in this LLC, they'll help us do the actual management on the ground. With the permission of the chair, I'd like to leave some of these brochures on the table over there.
Objection, it is so ordered.
If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to visit with you later. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Karen Terwilliger.
Good morning, Chair Everett and members of the board. Welcome, Member Rick Davies. This is nice to have you here at your first meeting. I know you've been on the phone a couple of times, and it's great to see you in person. I'm also going to have a non-regulatory comment today, and it's going to be about the budget, money, and the legislature. So you're going to hear a briefing this afternoon about DNR's budget requests, and I just wanted to give you some information about where Washington Forest Protection Association is. And I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce myself for the record. I'm Karen Terwilliger. I'm the senior forester with the Washington Forest Protection Association. So you have in your previous packet about six different decision packages and then two additional ones today. You've got three packages relating to capital budget programs or incentive programs, Triple F2P, which is the culvert program for small landowners, BREF, which is the buffer program for small landowners, and riparian open space, which is a program for conservation that can be taken advantage of by any landowners. Those three budget packages are very important. to the forest industry, and particularly PREP and FFFTP are an essential part of the adaptive management TFW policy and forest and fish framework, and we really support those three packages in particular. We also have two very high priorities in terms of your operating budget. First off, state agencies were required to put in a 15% reduction in their general fund state appropriations. And the Department of Natural Resources took all of that 15% cut in forest practices. And then their request to the legislature is to backfill with a different fund source. WFPA is extremely concerned about that cut. We've seen the legislature take cuts, but not necessarily backfill the requested cuts. And so our top priority in DNR's budget is to make sure that that's funded. If that $8.2 million is cut from the budget, we will go below the threshold that is required in the settlement agreement and the subsequent documents with the HCP. And so that is critically important for maintaining our legal support. Second high priority for the operating budget is the adaptive management program. As you may recall, we had a bill last year to fund the adaptive management program that was unsuccessful in the legislature. DNR has put forward a budget request for about $6 million for the next biennium for this program. If we do not get additional funding in the adaptive management program, our science program, we are only at about 20% funded for that program for the next biennium, which we don't think is adequate to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act or our HCP. There's a third issue that we also are very supportive of, and that's the support for LIDAR acquisition. And there's a budget package you're going to hear about that. We are particularly concerned and supportive of acquisition in areas that have been identified previously by DNR as high priority forest practices areas. And we're really interested in seeing DNR work with the consortium and also with local government to coordinate their budget requests and these processes. So with that, are there no questions?
Thank you. Mary Scurlock.
Good morning, Chairman Everett, members of the board. Good to see you, Member Davis, here in person. I'm going to focus on one of the budget requests that you are going to hear about later, and that is DNR's budget proposal of $5.9 million for the Adaptive Management Program. The Conservation Caucus strongly supports this budget request and encourages the board to do whatever it can to encourage the governor to make sure that this budget request gets into his request, and to remind you that the state has an obligation fund the research program under the adaptive management program. And thanks to Karen for pointing out that we are in a seriously deficient situation right now, and that we want to protect both the aquatic resources that need this research to happen and the regulated communities, Endangered Species Act and Clean Water Act assurances around the forest practices HCP. This is a critical request while we work out a long-term permanent solution to funding this program, and we would look forward to working with you and others to making it happen. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Peter Goldman.
Good morning, board members and Chair Everett. Maybe predictably, I will be touching on some regulatory to-dos. I'm Peter Goldman, director of the Washington Forest Law Center, and we partner with and represent the Conservation Caucus. I intend to address the board's consideration of Section 16 during the next comment period, but I'd like to briefly overview three of our caucus's forest priorities pertinent to this board's work. Again, first and foremost, the steep and unstable slopes work we're doing. In addition to the Section 16 board manual that we're going to be talking about later, I'd like to remind the board that we still have unfinished business relative to steep and unstable slopes in general. After it's been almost 2 years since CMER's mass wasting effectiveness study has been out, and about a little less time since DNR's South Wilbur Hills study has been out. And both of these studies found, in general, that the regulations governing forest practices on steep and unstable slopes do not cover all portions of the forest landscape, and that there are some gaps in screening and enforcement that we would need to deal with, and that the board has a role in some of these things, and policy has a role in some of these things. So we urge the board to recognize this major piece of unfinished business, and then as we sort of work towards the Section 16 and more public safety issues today, we have to loop back and get pick up where we left off with those other things. And there's a lot of stakeholder work. We've had presentations by DNR on how apps are screened and whatnot. It's all been very useful, but we haven't finished that important work yet, despite a lot of meetings and a lot of negotiations. Northern spotted owls. In the 6 years since 2008, settlement of the federal litigation relating to spotted owls, there have been extensive studies, negotiations, and recovery planning taking place. It's been very collaborative, very science-based. Haven't been lawsuits, there haven't been petitions for rulemaking. We've worked very, very cooperatively with a lot of caucuses. In particular, our staff scientist, Dr. Carl Whitaker, was a leading participant on the technical team for an extensive state and federal study of which habitat on state and private forests matter the most for owl protection and recovery. We respect that public safety considerations relating to steep and unstable slopes compete for the board's and DNR's scarce time. But spotted owls are declining between 4 to 7% per year in Washington, and the bird's habitat is being logged today. So we are respectfully asking the board to, you know, find some time. We have to put this back on the agenda so that we can present to you a scientifically credible package that protects important and strategic northern spotted owl habitat. And finally, forest and fish implementation issues. There are two major pieces of unfinished business before this board relating to that. First, DNR is still, the regulatory system is still approving FPAs under a 14-year-old interim water typing system. This system, as we have repeatedly argued, and I think many stakeholders agree, underprotects in many places actual and potential fish habitat and off-channel habitat. There have been months and months of negotiations in front of policy, but unfortunately, including mediation, and unfortunately, they have yielded nothing, no agreement today. We need to move on and finally get to a water typing package that recognizes the reality out in the field, and that's consistent with all the purposes of the Act and the HCP. And secondly, we need to adopt the board manual pertaining to identifying the perennial initiation point, the PIP, of streams and rivers in the stream, so that those streams are designated to begin in a place that everybody agrees on through some method, as opposed to sort of a random selection or some kind of more discretionary selection in the field. So again, we recognize the bandwidth. We want to thank DNR for all of its amazing work getting this board manual. It has taken a lot of time, and we totally understand that. But we do have to move on with these other items as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff reports are our next item of business on the agenda, and the chair has a few things that I'd like to take some time to call out, but before I do that, are there questions that board members had or further discussion that you'd like to have on what material was in the staff report? Hearing none, I'd like us to first spend a bit of time on adaptive management, and to do that, I'd ask Chris and Amy Kurtenbach to come join the board. You'll notice that your adaptive management staff report is a little lengthier and a bit more detailed than the last number of months have been, and that's to draw the board's attention to the number of CMER science studies, research projects that are ongoing and soon to be in front of policy. It's to draw your attention to our continued work to implement an improved and efficient system of lean approach, or lean management approach to this research projects themselves. Chris has got a bit of an update on our adaptive management program administrator situation, and with that as a probably too lengthy preface one, I'd just like the two of you take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Members of the board, good morning. I'm Chris Hanlon-Meyer, the Forest Practices Division Manager, and with me today is
Amy Kurtenbach. Thank you.
And for board members' benefit, Amy is one of our lead project managers in the Adaptive Management Program.
So first, I'd like to start with some great news. We filled the Adaptive Management Program Administrator position. Hansburg brings us a great depth of experience and enthusiasm in adaptive management. He comes with 15 years of experience as a fisheries biologist with King County, working on things such as salmon restoration in streams and rivers. He's participated in many teams and projects with many jurisdictions within King County. He's an effective communicator with work and leadership experience evaluating projects and programs for funding and writing, managing grants and technical studies. In his application material, he provided a long list of scientific articles that he was either author or co-author, as well as many grants that he's managed and concluded. We're continuing to work with Hans on his start date. I'll let you know in February if he's not here. He will be here before the February meeting. Okay, moving on to the CMER status report then. Amy was going to talk a little bit about the projects listed in the AMP CMER status update memo that are LEAN projects.
Hey, good morning. I've been introduced, but my name is Amy Kurtenbach, and I am one of the project managers in the Adaptive Management Program. Before I introduce the projects and talk about the projects, Erin Everett has asked me to share with you an opportunity that DNR is supporting me on, and that is my pursuit of a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt to the University of Washington. So thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Watch out for Amy if you get on the wrong side.
We'll bring her along as a bodyguard.
So in order for me to graduate, I need to complete a black belt project. This project needs to be applicable to my organization where I can apply Lean Six Sigma principles. Working with Erin and Chris Hanlon-Meyer, we chose the AMP Lean pilot. Before I share my black belt project with you, I would like to provide a brief description or reminder of what Lean is. Lean is actually very simple in concept. It is a continuous improvement methodology based on problem solving and creativity with mastery and purpose. The core idea is to maximize customer value with minimizing waste. The origins of Lean is in the manufacturing industry. It was perfected by Toyota. There's a popular misconception that Lean is suited only for manufacturing. This is not true. In government organizations or knowledge service organizations, which is what we are, Lean challenges us to examine policies and procedures from a stakeholder point of view and question what adds value and what waste can be eliminated. I'm sure that many of you are already aware of this, but the Lean integration movement is one of Governor Inslee's reform priorities. This is to empower state employees to find efficiencies through greater use of management. This program is referred to as Results Washington. The goal is that these efficiencies will help our leaders prevent additional cuts to essential services and programs. And of course, this is important to me in the Adaptive Management Program. Lean is not without its challenges. Lean challenges the status quo and asks us to question why we do what we do and if we can do it better without error. So it pushes us to change, and change is uncomfortable for some. Also, because it's a continuous improvement process, the principles of Lean need to be woven into our organization's culture and become the way we do things. This takes energy, time, and commitment, and of course, our DNR management knows this. In February of 2012, under the board's leadership, CMER implemented a pilot Lean process. This was a temporary process. My Black Belt project will be looking at the AMP pilot. The sponsor of my project is Erin Everett. My project deliverables will be a status update of the Lean pilot, and I will provide my recommendations for employing Lean principles to continue the pilot. It is my personal optimism that the pilot will encourage the AMP to continue to look at this process and how we can do more with it. So I have some work to do. At this point, I would like to give you a very brief summary of the status of the pilot projects. A more detailed summary is in your memorandum. The goal of the AMP pilot is to increase the efficiencies of the scoping and study design phase of the CMER process. The pilot created TWIGS, which is an acronym for Technical Writing and Implementation Groups. Each TWIG has 5 team members, which is 4 scientists and 1 project manager, who are considered to be technical experts in that field of study. We currently have 5 active TWIGs. The tangible deliverables or success criteria for the pilots is to deliver study designs that the AMP or the APA, or the Adaptive Management Program, can implement in the field and will fulfill the needs of our program. So currently, our newest TWIG is the Forest and Wetlands Effectiveness TWIG, and they are in the process of identifying and selecting TWIG members. The Unstable Slopes Criteria TWIG has selected its TWIG members, and their first meeting, I'm pleased to report, is in the 1st of December. The Westside Type F Riparian Prescription Effectiveness TWIG is currently exploring study design alternatives. The Eastside Type N Riparian Buffer Effectiveness TWIG, which is probably the furthest along of all of our TWIGs, just completed preliminary field work at 39 basins in eastern Washington. This data will improve their understanding of flow timing in eastern Washington seasonal Type N streams. They will start working on their study design this winter. And then lastly, the Roads Effectiveness BMP TWIG is currently looking at best available science and study design alternatives for SEMA review and consideration. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. Chris, before we move on, for to try and encapsulate all that, you know, so we the board initiated this streamlined process. We hope is an improved process for moving through what we all know to be a fairly monumental volume of science work. It's accelerated. Schedule of work in adaptive management, and I thought it really important that we not just do that and let it sail off toward the horizon without ever really checking on whether it was meeting its performance objectives or not. And particularly, looking at as board members look at the volume of studies that are going to come before senior policy over the next calendar year, I think it's very timely for us to do, and I really appreciate these initiatives.
Thank you. So, keeping up with the SEMER status update memo, 5 projects have been submitted to the policy or will be submitted to the policy in the near future, and include the project effectiveness of riparian management zone prescriptions in protection and maintaining shade and water temperature in forested streams in eastern Washington. Also known as the BTO temperature and solar radiation effective shade study, short name for a long name. The second one is the effectiveness of riparian management zones in providing habitat for wildlife. Thirdly, effects of forested roads and tree removal in or near wetlands of the Pacific Northwest. That's a literature synthesis. And the fourth, wetland research and monitoring strategy, and then finally, review and synthesis of literature on tailed frogs with special reference to managed landscapes. The final project reports that will come to the TFW policy during calendar year 16 after independent scientific peer review and SEMER approval are scheduled to include the Eastern Washington Type N Forest Hydrology Study, the West Side Type N Experimental Buffer Treatment and Hard Rock Lithology Study, also known as Hard Rock Study, and the Hardwood Conversion Study. Attached to the memo in your board packet is a SEMER status update table. This table provides you information on each of the projects. While it is very informative, it does not describe the huge amount of effort and hard work by many of the SEMER partners, participants, scientists, and contractors. SEMER relies heavily on the expertise and commitment of all of the TFW stakeholders. And then finally, I wanted to just let you know about the SEMER Science Conference scheduled for February 2015. The Comprehensive Monitoring, Evaluation, and Research Committee has developed a 2-day science conference to take place on February 11th and 12th. These 2 days follow the February Forest Practices Board meeting with the intent to make it easier for board members to attend the conference. The conference will include one full day on very comprehensive type N experimental buffer treatment basalt lithology study, again, also known as the Hard Rock Study, and presentations on eight other CEMER projects: the forested wetlands literature synthesis, forest wetlands strategy, Eastern Washington Type N Forest Hydrology Study, the Type F Bulltrop Overlay Temperature Shade Project, Eastern Washington Riparian Assessment Project, Buffer Integrity Shade Effectiveness Study, the Riparian Management Zone Study Resample, and the Hardwood Conversion Study. So the conference flyer and the agenda will be sent to you once it is finalized. So with that, concludes the Adaptive Management Program update.
Thanks, Chris, and again, for board members' benefit, Chris has been doing double duty as kind of an interim Adaptive Management Program Administrator with the good help and facilities of our co-chairs in CEMER, Archaic City Ecology, and Todd Baldwin, as well as Andy. Chris is nodding emphatically enough to let me know that Amy's carrying his water. The reason to try and dwell just for a minute on the 2015 Science Conference is because, as Chris noted, it's scheduled in such a way that it be continuous with the board meeting, February 12th board meeting, I believe. And so what I think I'm going to do is actually make the February board meeting a regular meeting on the first day and a special meeting on the second 2 days, so that if we have a quorum of board members who cares to stick around and attend the science conference, which I think is pretty important to do, that we provide that opportunity for you and you don't have to run into an open public meetings issue with having a quorum of board members at the science conference. So I wanted first to let you know that I think it is really important for board members to attend the science conference. There are an awful lot of really fundamental and foundational studies that are coming onto our horizon, and it'll be beneficial for you to be there. As much as I can see the excitement on your faces about two solid days of hard science for non-scientific people, it really is it's pretty essential stuff. So I hope you'll join us for that.
Is that going to be right here?
The science conference is across the way in the OB2 auditorium, if I'm not mistaken. Any other questions for Chris or Amy before we move along? Thank you both. Thank you. I wanted to, secondly, just sort of point board members to a follow-up action that we had discussed around our ongoing Western Gray Squirrel discussions at the most recently at the last regular meeting of the board. One of the key follow-up actions on that subject was to work with WDFW to organize some training for small forest landowners in Clickitat County. You'll note that the Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee and Small Forest Landowner Office staff report has a discussion scheduled between the advisory committee and WDFW staff to try and organize that next month, or have to organize the training next month, but organize the effort to schedule the training next month. So I wanted to be sure that the board was aware of that, since it's one sentence in a five-page memo. Any questions about that? And finally, you'll notice in the Upland Wildlife Working Group memo, WDFW staff, Terry Jackson, and DNR staff, Sherry Felix in particular, have been very hard at work for the board to meet our board's requirements that, you know, when the federal services make a new listing or critical habitat decision, the board expects to receive a recommendation from DNR and WDFW, having consulted on the meaning of those listings and the potential effect on forest practices. And we have had a series of those over the past year. Some of them are completed, some of them are still ongoing. But because there are a number of them, although the sort of geographic footprint of the species is relatively small, I wanted to just provide board members an opportunity to ask any questions that you might have about the recommendations we got from WDFW and DNR staff. Most of the recommendations are that at this point in time, we don't see the need for the board to consider potentially new rulemaking. Again, some of those are listings and critical habitat decisions are still ongoing, so we'll need to continue to evaluate those as they're concluded, but I want to be sure that we took a moment at least to give you the opportunity to ask any questions that you have. Who's safe? Moving on. Our next item of business is to help the board, regale the board with a series of discussions around our 2015-17 biennial budget requests, both from the Sport Practice Program as well as the DNR Geology Program. We have Megan Duffy, who is Deputy Supervisor for Aquatics and Geology, to join us for this discussion, although I do not see her in the room right at this moment, and as well as Chris. Chris, since you're up first in the discussion, why don't we begin, and hopefully Megan joins us shortly.
Thank you, Chair Everett. Members of the board, again, I'm Chris Hanlonmeyer, Forest Practices Division Manager. Here to talk to you about the DNR's 2015-17 budget requests. First, the two DNR 2015-17 decision packages that are in your day of packet reflect the DNR's response to the governor's request that agencies submit budget documents to reflect a 15% reduction in general fund state funding. DNR could not propose the general fund state reduction in such high priority needs as fire suppression and forest practices. The forest practices program would not be able to meet the commitment made in the TFW Forest and Fish Agreement and the Forest Practices Habitat Conservation Plan if such budget reduction was realized. So, consistent with the governor's request, DNR is proposing a shift of $8.158 million from the general fund state appropriation to the Aquatic Lands Enhancement Account. Also pursuant to the governor's request, DNR submitted a decision package that reverses the fund shift, creating a starting place for the budget enhancement requests that I'll talk about next. DNR submitted six budget requests that will directly affect or benefit the Forest Practices Program, three operating budget requests and three capital budget requests. DNR is striving to achieve a compliance rate of 90% or greater on all riparian, unstable slopes, and road prescriptions. The Adaptive Management Program is accelerating the pace of research to assess the effectiveness of the Forest Practices Rules as indicated on the Forest Practices Board approved CEMA Master Schedule, and significant budget needs exist to achieve these outcomes. The 2015-17 budget requests from the State Forest Practices Program include two operating budget requests. The first one, Forest Practices Compliance, total of $3.2 million for the biennium. Since 2007, the operating budget for the Forest Practices Program has been reduced by 30%, while the rate of new forest practices applications received has increased to nearly 40%. In addition, the current body of approved applications is approximately 10,000, in which the program has 45 staff to conduct post-approval compliance checks. Complexity of applications is also increasing, particularly with respect to landslide hazards. This proposal funds a new compliance initiative that adds key positions and funding for some one-time investments in program functionality, efficiency, and customer service. The second operating budget request from the Forest Practices Program is the Forest and Fish Adaptive Management Decision Package request for a total of $5.9 million. This request will fund accelerated Forest Practices Adaptive Management Program research monitoring projects necessary to support the Forest Practices Habitat Conservation Plan and comply with the 2012 Legal Settlement Agreement. This request will sustain the Adaptive Management Program for the 2015-17 biennium and set a funding schedule for future biennium to enable the program to fully meet the Forest Practices Habitat Conservation Plan, Clean Water Act assurances, and settlement commitments for the state. Three capital budget proposals, the Family Forest Fish Passage Program for $11.5 million, the Forest Riparian Easement Program for $11.2 million, and the Rivers and Habitat Open Space Program for $4 million. The Geology and Earth Resources request, which is is a total of $6.6 million, and it asks for things funding to complete the landslide hazard zonation project, as well as acquire LIDAR data for the. Expecting Megan to be here to explain this. So
we give you just a second here, Chris and Patricia. I see Megan walking by outside the door. So why don't we? Hello, Megan. Come join us, please. We're a model of efficiency at the board here this morning, and so we're a little ahead of schedule.
Fabulous.
And turns out you're up.
So I was also a model of efficiency in walking in the door only when I had to start my presentation.
Timing is impeccable.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Megan Duffy. I am the Deputy Supervisor for Aquatics and Geology here at the department. I'm here just to give you a quick overview of a budget request for the Geological Hazards and Earth Resources Division here at DNR. This biennium, we are requesting approximately $6.5 million. The funding is to support a geological hazards package, and the notion behind that package is that we have the ability to collect critical information, interpret that information, develop the maps necessary for that, and then provide that information, maps, etc., to the public, decision makers, etc. The package consists of various elements. Approximately $2.4 million of it is for LIDAR acquisition. And here's a map of what we have deemed to be the priority areas for acquisition in the state. We've identified 9. The budget request covers the first 4. It's approximately 4,805 square miles. At $500 a square mile, that gets you to $2.4 million. That's part of the budget request. These priority areas were based upon a few criteria. 1, population, infrastructure, transportation corridors, where there's risk to those elements. We also looked at where, and the colors are not great projected up there, so I apologize about that. We also looked at where there is existing high-resolution LIDAR data and where there is medium-resolution LIDAR data, the difference being high-resolution is 8 strikes per square meter, low and medium is 2 strikes per square meter. Where we have medium-resolution LIDAR, that's of higher quality. So there's a range of quality with regard to LIDAR depending upon the time of year it was flown, whether or not you're covering areas, all areas, or whether there's gaps, etc. So we looked at that and identified what LIDAR exists that's currently usable, where, based upon the criteria I mentioned, where we think we need additional high quality, high resolution LIDAR. And then you'll also see in the first 4 boxes, so you'll see up Watkins, Gadget, Snohomish, parts of Keene, and then further in the southwest corner. Those were the areas we currently focus on, and we are mindful of the budget situation across the street. That's why we're not starting with a request for all 9 areas. This is something that will be ongoing biennium to biennium, and we'll need to keep at it.
Would it really even be practical from a flying LIDAR itself standpoint to try and take the entire state out of one bite in a 2-year biennium period?
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine there's a certain number of planes available and a certain number of houses.
Right. It's not physically feasible to cover the entire state. You will see that there are white gaps in some of those boxes. Where those white gaps are is where we think we have a pretty significant opportunity to partner with those landowners. Largely, they are federal landowners. And part of the whole notion behind this request is that we'd use state money, but we'd also use that money to try to leverage and get additional funds from other interested parties, entities, who might want LIDAR for their area. That way we can cover more of the state with fewer state dollars. So that is the notion there. Basically what will come out of this and will be available is the LIDAR data itself, the raw LIDAR data that comes in, digital elevation models, the state geologist and his team. We currently have 3 folks assigned to hazards work. They will take that information and do landslide inventories and susceptibility maps, those types of products. Clearly, LiDAR data can be used for a lot more depending upon what model you're using and who's doing the analysis. We also are requesting in the package resources to support data management and storage. Obviously, a big piece of this is storing that data, maintaining that data, and having somebody stewarding that as we move forward. So that's a big piece of it. We also are requesting funding for some FTEs. As I mentioned, we currently have three geologists focused on tsunamis, earthquakes, volcanoes, landslides, and any of the myriad of geological hazards that exist in Washington State. So we're asking for support, largely FTEs focused on the landslide effort, the mapping of the landslides. So that, in a nutshell, is what the request is about. Happy to take any questions.
Governor Sellers.
Maggie, could you describe what the colors are?
I apologize about that. So, let's see, is there a pointer on this one? So the dark green, that's technically a dark green line. You can see they're bolded, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Those are the priority areas for which we're asking for funding. The darker rust color is where we're suggesting we need funding to cover those areas. The white areas are the pieces I mentioned are largely federal landowners where we're really hoping that we can be efficient and effective at partnering. This color here is a medium resolution LiDAR. However, although it's only the 2 strikes per meter, it also was done in such a way that we believe it's usable for purposes of geological hazards mapping. And then this color here is existing high quality, high resolution LiDAR. So you see all Pierce County's got the high resolution, high quality LiDAR. So that's, it's a bit of a complicated map, but we are trying to be as comprehensive as possible in looking at what exists, what can we use, where can we have likely partners and funding efforts, and then covering where we think, based upon the criteria of infrastructure, population, et cetera, where we think we really need it.
And so, to be clear on the budget request, does it include additional funding for staff to help take the LiDAR data and interpret it?
It does, yes. And also to provide technical assistance to counties, cities, others, so that we have kind of a centralized place for statewide LiDAR. So we've got a team of folks who are interpreting that LiDAR in a consistent fashion and then providing technical support to the folks who need to make decisions.
Thank you. This is very interesting, and I know that only part of this pertains to forest practices. We've got a lot of other applications. I'm curious about the time frame a little bit. Assuming this was funded on your narrative about the project, it talks about what performance outcomes you might expect from this. You know, just reading that, it just sounds great. I mean, all these different products, but I don't imagine that they're all immediately available. Can you give us a sense of a time frame for developing these tools that would be available to folks?
Sure, and we would obviously start with where we have the existing LiDAR data that we think is usable. A big piece of this is developing the internal capacity to develop the products and the deliverables. So once we would have staff on board, we'd hit the ground running with what's existing. And clearly LiDAR is a little bit season and weather dependent, so we have to be working around those parameters as well. This is frankly, this is a long-term effort, to be completely honest, but it's something we get started on right away.
Board Member Morgan.
So just a basic question. When we purchase the LiDAR data from? And then if you could also comment on, I know that the feds use LiDAR data quite a bit. Are there pretty strict sharing requirements we have to have agreements, or is it once the state owns it?
So your first question is, there are a few contractors with whom we would enter into contract for to do the flights and then provide us the data. We do the interpretation here. I don't know if you've ever seen kind of the raw data that comes in from a LiDAR flight, but it doesn't show up like the maps that you look at and say, oh, okay, I see a geological hazard there. Second piece is, to my knowledge, there aren't kind of strict rules around how you share or what you share in what form. Our intent is to make everything available that we would collect via the state.
And you mentioned that some of the LiDAR data has already been developed.
There has been some LiDAR. LiDAR's been flown, acquired in various places in the state.
So it's probably a patchwork of current ownership of who owns it, so then that takes coordination to secure that
yes,
as well.
Yes, absolutely. A big piece of it is coordination. The funding, the prioritizing, et cetera, where you're gonna fly.
Board Member Shaheen.
So this particular piece of the budget is obviously very important in light of a lot of the work that we've been doing lately. So I have a couple questions. One is, does the agency anticipate problems getting this particular budget package supported, you know, given its importance? And if so, are there ways to, you know, have you sort of done a sensitivity analysis of how you might pare down the budget request in case there's, you know, just given all the other competing priorities in this upcoming budget, are there ways to, you know, fund part of this request but not all of it and still get, you know, high priority areas taken care of?
So the answer to your first question is this actually does represent a bit of a pared down package from where we started. Clearly, if we get direction from the legislature that we need to make some changes, we will, because there's also some funding in here for earthquake and tsunami work to occur. So we take a hard look at that and pare down as necessary. And to date, in the conversations, we've had some conversations with folks across the street, and we've encountered nothing but support and or the, you know, the negative end of the spectrum has been neutrality thus far, so.
How does Washington's, as a state, expenditures on or funding of geologic hazards identification compare with other states?
It is fairly low down on the range of state geological survey funding. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but when you look at the range, it's in the bottom third, and in light of the hazards that we have here in Washington State, potential hazards, it's disproportionate.
I think we got to be able to do better than the bottom third, it seems to me.
One would hope.
I think back to Board Member Sweeney's question, I think the department decided that we needed to make some pretty significant budget requests in spite of and recognizing the full recognition of the difficult budget situation the state faces. And the thinking on that is simply that if we're not asking for it, it's not going to happen. And speaking personally, that's going to entail, you know, a number of what I would assume to be unpleasant conversations with appropriators about why we had the audacity to ask for, you know, 6.2 for geologic hazards and LIDAR, and 3.2 for forest practices compliance, and 5.9 for adaptive management. I don't expect any of those discussions to be particularly fun, because there are difficult and competing priorities. But if we're not asking for this, it isn't going to happen. So that's I think the best way to characterize our thinking. The questions for Chris and Megan? I'll circle back around to something Chris said at the onset of his remarks, and it was around the issue of the governor's 15% cut request. And I think the board heard it characterized as the department proposing a cut for forest practices. And When you look at the structure of the department's budget, there are two things that DNR receives general fund state dollars for. One is fire suppression, and one is sports, any other sports practices. Those are the two main areas. Geology, I would mention along those lines as well, except that at the present time, it's a pretty small proportion. Looking again at that, and looking with a high degree of focus on competing priorities and understanding what our needs really are, we just weren't going to propose a cut to force practices. Weren't going to do it, and we're not also going to propose a cut for fire suppression after the record year that we've had. And so the fund swap proposal that Chris outlined, the department felt was the best alternative because it just didn't seem acceptable to us to reduce the funding for either of those two programs, being the largest single sources of general fund in the department. So it does, it does present the opportunity for the legislature, as it always will, to have the chance to decide what their funding priorities are. But that was the real thinking behind that choice. It just wasn't a period of time where we were going to propose those reductions. So we proposed the fund swap with aquatic lands enhancement account instead, and figuring that the nexus between aquatic lands enhancement and the protection of aquatic resources and forest practices was a real strong nexus. That was the basis of what we did. So I share folks' concern about whether that comes to fruition, and I think we're again in for a long series of pretty difficult budget discussions over these really important priorities this year. Board Member Shelton.
Is the fund swap approach sustainable in future years as we go forward? Is it sustainable?
We believe it is. It's fortunate that Megan's with us today. The aquatic lands enhancement account revenue primarily comes from the sale of or the auction of Gouda and a few other revenue sources. Megan, you want to talk about that?
Our leasing program, and as Aaron said, a big piece of it is the sale of wild stock Gouda. So half of that money goes to RMCA, and the other half goes to OMEA.
So I think it is sustainable. Need to continue to have a strong food.
We would expect to see reductions
in which other program?
ALEA.
That's right. Yeah, currently the destination for that ALEA funding, the Aquatic Land Enhancement Account funding, is access and recreation and development type grants and capital projects. So there are competing interests for those funds. No two ways about it. Board members, again.
So, you know, I think everybody knows that natural resource programs in general across the state have taken, hit after hit after hit. And this is maybe a little bit of a soapbox moment, but I think we get used to it. You know, it's been sort of our current reality since the recession. You know, it happened in earlier recessions in the early 2000s. And we just kind of get used to it. And, everybody tightens their belt and everybody figures out, how we make things work. But I think in reality, things don't work as well as they should, and that, in general, our natural resources and what ecology has to do, what state parks has to do, what DFW has to do, what DNR has to do, is, incredibly important for the health and safety and quality of life of our citizens. And I just think perhaps as board members and, interested members of the public that work on these issues every day, we need to put our heads together and figure out a different way to fund these things and not always get the short end of the stick. And I know that no one intends to, and that there's other really big in healthcare and education, all of those things are really important, but just to continue to erode the ability of us to protect these things that are crucial to our citizens is obviously not sustainable. So I just wanted to note for the record that this trend is not something I think we can maintain.
Parting questions for Chris and Megan? Seeing none, I think the last thing we ought to maybe discuss for a moment before we conclude this part of the agenda is what's the sense of board members about whether the board itself wants to weigh in with the governor's office and OFM on the department's budget requests, or how would the board care to see the chair, for example, represent its thoughts about the budget priorities as those discussions move ahead. I feel like we all recognize that these are pretty essential things, that it's an extraordinary difficult time to do them and fund them adequately. I think it's an all-hands-on-deck type of a moment for trying to express that priority, recognizing that some of you represent cabinet agencies. That's probably a fairly uncomfortable thing. So I don't want to misrepresent the board's feelings in this matter, but I also think the board has place in emphasizing for these requests to be considered seriously. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess my sense is we ought to be clear about priorities. It's a pretty aggressive package. I understand, you know, why it's being put forward. A number of agencies are doing the same. We ought to be clear about what our number one, number two, number three, you know, the adaptive management piece, some portion of the LIDAR piece seem to me to be very high priorities for us. And then we ought to think about a early January discussion, I think, depending on what comes out in the governor's budget in mid-December, because probably not all of this will. So where are we at? What strategies do we have to work with the legislature? Where are other agencies in terms of being able to partner? But I think a post, post-December discussion would be good to have.
Well, I'm wondering if a motion of support would be appropriate, which I'd be happy to do. And beyond that, since I don't represent a cabinet department, you know, I think those of us that don't should and would be available to assist you in discussions with the governor's office and then later in the legislature to move forward. I think these things are, I couldn't agree more with the comments earlier about the declining resource. I mean, these are forests, streams, rivers, lakes, Puget Sound. We have to manage them appropriately. I mean, we have a stewardship responsibility, and I support what you're going for. You know, the LIDAR is the right step. We're all looking at that, how to improve our natural hazard responses. We're redoing our plan for all natural hazards in Snohomish County. It's something that's got to get done. It really does. So I'd be happy if you think it is appropriate for a motion or to supporting the report at this point, and then committing to further support for you in your unpleasant meetings. And they're always unpleasant, you know. Doesn't matter what you're asking for, they're always unpleasant.
Board Member Stanley.
I'll probably get into trouble on this, but I would say that these requests are important to both the industry and small forest landowners. So I think there'll be a lot of help coming from our end.
Other thoughts on this? It's an interesting one for how the board weighs in formally. Are there other thoughts about a motion of support for the budget requests, and perhaps folks that are uncomfortable voting on it could abstain, as an example? Board Member Davis?
In addition to a motion of support, I wonder if adding an emphasis on the clear connection to public safety for clean water, that might be helpful just to highlight the very clear connection, the programs that we have to public safety.
Board Member Sabine.
So would this motion include both the capital and operating budgets, or just the operating side?
I would seat the rest of the board members' counsel on that.
Just for to get things rolling, I would just move a motion of general support for by the Forest Practice Board for both capital and operating budget requests by DNR to the governor and the legislature.
Motion's been moved. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Board Member Little. Discussion on the motion? Alderman Laurie.
Thank you. I guess it'd be nice to actually see the motion. If the motion is to encourage the governor to include in his budget these things, I can vote for that as a cabinet agency. If it's kind of outside of the governor's budget building process, then I would have to abstain.
Of course.
So it really depends on the wording there.
Since we're at the step of asking governor to include these, I think that's appropriate step at this point. So
yeah,
I think the way it's stated, motion was support with respect for the request, and I'd consider that a friendly amendment that we're the request at this point is to the governor to include these in his budget.
Yeah, so they're encouraging the governor to.
Patricia's typing feverishly, and we have a clarification from staff. Mark?
Well, just we missed the friendly amendment. They're trying to capture the first motion.
Of course. You want to restate the friendly amendment?
Well, the point is this is a motion of support by the Board of Practice Board to the request to the governor to move these in this budget. Request to the governor.
Board
Member Sweeney. I wanted a little more opportunity to talk about the difference between the operating and the capital budget. I think the operating budget stuff is very crucial and timely. The items on the capital budget side, while they're always important, especially the programs that support small forest landowners, I think in a budget year like this, and I know the capital budget's always a little bit of a different discussion, but when you get into debt and bombing and all that, and the politics of it can get complicated, I'm a little wary of throwing them into the same bucket, and I'm a little wary of the implications of large capital budget requests and just having sort of blanket support for them, knowing the kinds of trade-offs. I would rather have the fight on the operating budget side and throw all of the capital into that, but not necessarily get inadvertently tangled up in arguments about money for things that others may perceive as less important than other items.
So would you?
My request would be to have a motion supporting the board supporting the operating budget, to leave the capital budget off, and that we as individual board members can provide our input and assistance to you as desired.
Okay. That would be an amendment to the motion, and I see we're having technical difficulties. So what I'd like to do is to give our staff a few minutes to try and encapsulate the discussion we've had here going into the break. We'll take our break. We'll come back in about 15 minutes, and Patricia, by that time, will have some actual text for us to talk about. So we'll be back here at about 20 after, 25 after.